Welcome to the Tiny Sessions podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Herridge. This is a sustainable podcast inspired by people who wish to live slow. Think vans, narrow boats, cabins, and more. Because hey, let's face it, life is worth living. As always, we have a beautiful guest chatting all things unique spaces, travels, and sustainability, and your question answered at the end, giving you tips on this amazing way of living. If you would like to follow us on your socials, then head to StitcherCo on Instagram. Our wonderful guests are people who I have just wanted to have a chat with, giving you the chance to be inspired just as I have. Today my guests are Pete and Em from Little Floating Home. We talk about living life on a boat, how they got on living and moving in without any gas or electricity. We talk about mooring fees, how it is renovating a boat and life on boat as general and their plans heading forwards. We also talk about that question that we love to ask all our guests, sustainability wise, what do you wish you or we had more of? Pete and Em, thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast for the Tiny Sessions podcast series. It's so nice to be able to chat to you guys. I know that you guys are living on a boat, which is really exciting. I love it. I think we need more of that. I absolutely love it. For anyone who doesn't know about you guys or haven't seen your space yet, could you just tell us a little about yourselves and also just a bit of background information, really?
Yeah, for sure. So we, Pete and Em, and we moved onto a 42-foot narrowboat back in September and have been living there full time. We bought it kind of just before lockdown.
And so then 2 days before lockdown.
Oh wow.
And then stranded it. It was stranded in the middle of nowhere.
Had to abandon it.
And abandon ship and go back to my parents' house where we were for lockdown. And just leave this newly bought boat in the middle of nowhere for the entirety until Boris said we could go back.
And then, been doing it up. It's a kind of very old, like, boat from the 80s, so it's needed a lot of work and wasn't super looked after. So we've been doing it up. And I work in a school. You work with kids as well as a nanny and do lots of creative art things. You make paints out of like earth pigments.
Wow, that's nice.
Clay, and I like process it and then turn it into like watercolors and gouache and stuff. Is it gouache? Is that how you say
it? Gouache. That's cool.
And then Peter Cobb spoons. You're going to move on to furniture soon.
Yeah,
I reckon.
I'm going to
up the game.
Go from spoons to furniture. I love that. Do furniture.
Why
that's
not?
Great. That's amazing. What skills? You guys have got such cool skills. So do you do that alongside your work that you do?
At the moment it's kind of balancing a fair amount of things of boat renovations and work, and also just enjoying living on a boat and doing like our creative things and sitting outside on the roof and just living slowly and taking it all in. So kind of a mixture of all of those things.
I love that. You guys like being busy. You like doing a lot of things instead of just having one thing. That's nice. Some people are like that though. Some people sort of, they like thrive on that sort of style of working, which is really cool. So what made you guys choose boat to live on?
Okay, so this is a bit of a weird one. My youngest sister, back in, it would have been December 2019, had a dream that me and Peter bought a boat.
Really?
And so then we did.
We hadn't really thought about it before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously we've like, we love all the like tiny house videos and stuff like that. And so you kind of, yeah, love that alternative living and the ethos of that, and like financially makes a lot of sense. But we never really thought about a boat. And then she just said that and we kind of looked at each other and we're like, yeah,
let's do it.
Why not? That's amazing. Yeah. That is kind of bizarre. from that stage of like, I love that, that was a dream, and you guys just went, yep, why not, let's follow it. So from that moment, how did you go from sort of getting onto that sort of idea path to the first stage of actually like getting a boat? Like, did you know that you wanted a narrow boat straight away, or did you have to look at a few different styles of boats?
I think we wanted to stay like around the Midlands area, just because that's where we studied. And there's loads of canals here.
More canals than Venice, people tell me in Birmingham.
Oh, really? Wow, that's cool.
Horrible, in my opinion, but like in the centre. But where we live is.
Yeah.
What did we do?
Yeah, honestly, it was kind of. It was a narrow boat in her dream, and so that kind of made sense.
Yeah.
And then we just looked on Facebook Marketplace, and we saw this one come up, and it was the first one we went to look at, and we were just like, yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow, you just went, yeah.
So naive. Yeah, we were so naive. Yeah.
It was in pretty bad shape, and actually a lot worse than we initially thought.
Oh, okay.
It has really pretty light.
Sorry,
that's okay. No, it's fine. Yeah. I love that you've got a little Oatly there.
Barking away.
Yeah.
We mainly because of the light.
Yeah.
That was like the reason, is because there were so many windows and it was horrible inside. I hope that the previous owners don't listen to this.
Everyone's got their own taste. It's fine. Everyone has their own stuff.
Since the 80s.
What was that story? It hasn't been changed since the 80s.
No, it hadn't been changed at all.
All very well looked after either. So it wasn't like nice 80s. It was like rotting.
Oh, yeah, rotting isn't good on any kind of space. Oh, no. Oh, wow. So, okay. So then you got this boat, and how did you go about renovating it? Did you guys get help in, or did you renovate it yourselves?
So we've done a lot of it ourselves.
Yeah.
We got married in July. I booked us an Airbnb for 4 weeks to do up the boat. I'm quite optimistic. I thought we would have it completely done by the time 4 weeks, but then we ended up moving in with no gas, electricity, water or heating after those 4 weeks.
We camped for a bit, you know.
You camped, well, you had a roof and a shell.
It was sophisticated camping.
I was gonna say, that's like glamping. That was all the rotting gone by that point, though? Had you sort of sorted out all of that structural side of things?
So it was mainly the floorboards and stuff, so replaced those, and then we painted by then, so
painted the inside, painted the outside, torn everything out, which was actually really hard because all the nails were rusty and rounded. Normally you do it, but you couldn't do that with any of them. I literally had to like ply them, crowbar them.
You can't just use a normal screwdriver
because they're just rusted. It's impossible. It took me and a friend 7 hours together to rip out the bathroom, just because it was so rusty and awful. So we had like a blank slate and half a kitchen when we moved in.
A
kitchen.
And what we did ourselves, so I built the kitchen myself. We painted ourselves. I installed the fireplace myself. You did the bathroom. You tiled a shower and learned how to do that. And the floor. Electrics and gas we left to other people.
Yeah.
Ben had a major leak, and maybe we shouldn't have left it to other people. But
but at least you couldn't blame yourselves.
Yeah. So it was all like I was like, those are my rules, like we're not doing electric and we're not doing gas.
No, yeah, I think that's wise. I think that's wise. Yeah. So everything else that you did yourselves, did you learn from YouTube, or did you use anything to teach yourselves, or did you have people that could teach you?
Like, mainly YouTube. Like, there's so many useful videos and stuff out there, like mainly YouTube, and actually the Narrowbit community, so helpful, and everyone, like people have been on them for years and doing things for years. Like, if we needed something, we'd just like find someone nearby and be like, hi, we don't know what we're doing.
Oh,
and like,
because so nice.
Young and naive and don't know what we're doing, I was quite happy.
That's so nice. So do you find that there's a narrowboat community that's obviously near you guys, where you're living, where you're based? Are there sort of narrowboat communities that you found that are really good online as well, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram groups or anything like that?
Yeah, our Instagram actually, like, is people are so kind on there, and do offer us advice, which has been really good. So yeah, mainly Instagram. There is like quite an active narrowboat forum that I occasionally lurk in.
Oh, cool.
I know. very active. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah. So I have been on there a couple of times.
That's more like traditional old school narrowboaters. Yeah. And then the Instagram's the more like young,
modern. Like, but the traditional ones are the ones who have the skills to tell you how to fix stuff properly. So yeah, there's sort of like good things of both of them. That's really nice to know that there is such like a community for that, especially if anyone really, like, say someone's just got a narrowboat themselves, or they really want to like give it a go. It's nice to know that there those sort of like forums are out there, and everyone's really like nice as well. It's nice to know that they're all out there, which is really cool. So the one thing that I always think of with boats and houseboats and things like that is mooring fees. So do you find, like, was it quite easy to sort all of that out and navigate that all? And do you find that it is still quite a reasonable amount, or was it more than what you expected?
So there's various options. We could continuously cruise, where you have to move once every 2 weeks, and then it costs £600 a year, which is amazing. But we both at the moment have jobs that mean we want to be in a vague area, and you have to cover a certain distance. So for the moment, we're in term time, kind of in a mooring. And so once we first got the boat, we wanted somewhere that had a good shower block and had like lots of facilities, because our shower wasn't fully working yet.
Yeah.
And lots of, just while we got started, because it was winter and the transition was so like much already. So we went for a marina that is quite expensive. I mean, still cheaper than a house. It's about
$4,000 a year.
$4,000 a year.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of $360 a month or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you break it down, it's not, it's actually, it's cheaper than renting still, if you break it down.
Especially where we are, we're in one of the most expensive areas of Birmingham. Like, rent here would be astronomical.
Yeah, it's a lovely area. But we're actually moving in a couple of weeks to somewhere on the canal. We've got a spot, beautiful, it's right by a lake. And there's, it's smaller, so there's about 6 boats in a row, and that is much cheaper because it has less facilities, but we've got more stuff sorted, so we'll need the facilities less. So that's about £160 a month.
That's amazing price.
That's
amazing. How did you go about finding the, like, the mooring fees? How do you have to contact like a harbour master or the council, or
So there's different options. There's moorings along the canal that are owned by the Canal and River Trust.
Okay.
And there's less of them, they're quite rare, so you just have to keep checking the website and seeing when something comes up, and those are cheaper. They don't always have electricity or things, so the one we're going doesn't have electricity, so we're going to be off-grid. But the other option is marinas, and they're not owned by the Canal and River Trust. They're kind of little lakes off of the canals, and they're generally slightly more expensive but have more facilities, more availability, and so it's just researching like marinas and yeah, it depends what you want. There's massive advantages
to
both.
Yeah.
What's funny is there's like a divide. So continuously cruisers are like, oh, why would you ever live in a marina? like boat.
Yeah. I love that. I guess, yeah, like you say, they both offer different things, don't they? And I know marinas are really lovely, but then I love the sound of the canal side of it, the sort of the nature side of it. I guess when you think of marinas, you think of the sort of sea life side of it, but definitely with canals you've got that nature side of it, which is really, really nice. So that's in a couple of weeks that you move there.
Yeah, really exciting. Thankfully we also are in a really beautiful marina, like it's a nature reserve.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's a registered nature reserve.
Oh, cool.
And some of them are like, this is probably one of the nicest ones I know of, but it's relatively new.
And we, with marinas, you can be quite packed in.
Yeah,
so we did, someone's just left from the other side, so which means we get more light again.
Oh, but I see,
people either side for a while.
Yeah.
That's what I don't like, and that's why I wouldn't want to live in a marina. And some people don't mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, you open it up and you're looking into someone else's kitchen.
Yeah.
So.
Whereas with the canal, you're just on the side and you know that there's always a side that you've got free. Yeah, I completely understand that. I think, for me, I think I would go with the canal as well. I like the sound of that. So life on a boat, a narrow boat, and you guys living on it full time. You've got your plan ahead for moving for 2 weeks, well, in 2 weeks. And then from that, I guess, I mean, you've got your job settled. So for you guys, it's not about necessarily traveling and moving all the time. It's having a house that is a floating house instead. And like, I guess you've saved a lot of money with that as well. Did you beforehand, were you saying that you sort of just thought, oh, you'll buy sort of your generic bricks and mortar house and save or rent and do it that way until your sister had this dream about the cool narrowboat idea?
We always knew we wanted to live differently. We wanted to live sustainably.
Yeah.
And we would have loved to live in a tiny house, but I think we probably were going to rent because we couldn't figure out how to do it practically.
Yeah.
Planning permission takes loads of time. Never built a house. Some of our best friends are actually, they are building a tiny house this summer, like, but it's way more work than something that you buy and you've already got a planning permission, you're already on the water, there's always there's already somewhere you can go, there's already a shell of something that you can work with. And so I always wanted to live differently.
And I think the whole mortgage thing is quite a trapping feeling.
Peter doesn't like it.
It's a lot of like in a boat, you don't have to commit to one place. You
it does just scare me when he says that. He's like, I'm a commitmentophobe, and I'm like, we're married.
Yeah, you're like, hang on a minute. I love that. No, it's true. I can relate to that as well. The idea of mortgages, they always put me off. But then I don't know if you've had it with, have you got any sort of friends or family who have said, like, why aren't you living in a like generic house? Like, do you have any family who sort of says to you, oh, like, how are you going to get like profit if you want to sell your boat and things like that and go on to the next place? Have you had people, not wrongly, but say that as an opinion?
I think my parents have been concerned about like us getting on the housing ladder, you know, because prices are increasing, and they're like, well, you need to get on now because, you know, next year they'll increase more, and next year, but like what you tend to find with boats is what we've told them is that when there's a housing crisis, boats values also go up because people are like, oh, we want to buy a boat. So so over lockdown, our boats actually just increased in value even without us doing anything because people want to buy boats.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So yeah. Really, it's like with anything, it just fluctuates and goes up and down, and even a boat can go up in value, really.
Yeah, like, I reckon it's increased by like,
we're hoping to have doubled the value of it by our renovations and things.
How do you find a dog on the boat?
It's intimate, you know, you're around him all the time. Come here and say hi. Come here.
What's this? He doesn't want to come.
He doesn't want to see us. We got to see him a little bit. He's beautiful.
There he is. Look at him. And a haircut. He loved it because he's close to us all the time, and like most dogs, he just, that's all he wants and needs really, is to be super close to us, and we're never away from him, like it's just one room.
Yeah,
all three together all the time.
I think when very little puppy, it was hard work because he was like full of energy and we couldn't take him outside yet because he hadn't had an injection, so that was hard. But now he loves it, and he fell in the water at 11 o'clock last night and was very upset about it, but other than that, he loved it.
Yeah, he might have to get used to the water.
He's a really bad swimmer.
Oh, is he? Oh, some dogs are. Yeah, some dogs aren't a fan of swimming. Oh, bless him. He's like, why have you got me in a boat? He will get used to it. He'll be all right. He'll love it.
We were walking down the canal, a separate part of canal to where we live this morning, and I could see him trying to jump onto these boats because to him, that's where he lives.
Yeah.
He lives on a boat.
Yeah.
He's trying to get the boats which are going down the canal. I was like, that's not your home.
No.
And like no other dogs would even do that. So that
does go into other people's boats here at the marina and enter their boats through the cat flap. Like the other day he went into someone's boat through their cat flap. Ate the whole thing of their butter and then threw it up while the person was asleep.
Did he throw it up in their boat as well?
To do that outside.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, that's got worse and then worse. Oh, I love it. Oh well, he is absolutely lovely, and I guess it shows that people can have dogs and puppies on a boat as well, which is really, really nice.
Like most boaters have a dog.
Yeah,
like it's a thing.
It's the best security apparently as well you can get for a boat.
Oh really? To have a dog?
I mean, I don't think he'd do much, like look at him, but
you never know, he might step up when and if the time came. You never know, it's handy. So on Instagram I always ask the community to submit questions in to ask our podcast guests, and I picked one of those, and it's from a lovely guy called Taliesin Green. He actually is renovating a narrowboat himself. And he's got a question because he was explaining in his question that he's got a fridge, which is fine, and it's fine when he's moored, but he's concerned about keeping it cold when he's not moored up. So he's got, I think he's thinking of perhaps moving, like when you said about how you can be in one spot and then move to another spot. So I think he's thinking about that. The question that he's asked is, what would you recommend regarding kitchen appliances?
That is a good question, and it's good timing because our new 12-volt fridge got installed yesterday. So we used to have just a regular like 240 like household fridge, and that's because we've been plugged into the mains here, it's been fine, but like we wanted to, because we just have the solar panel and obviously the battery charges when you run the engine, so there's a bit of life from that as well, but we will have less energy, and we do have an inverter. Takes the 12 volt battery and turns it into 240, but that takes energy to do. And it's about conserving as much energy as possible.
Yeah.
So we went for a 12 volt fridge. I think it's a Dometic compressor fridge.
Because it's quiet. The fridge works, which is wonderful. So we've obviously, when you have a countertop fridge, like you can only really use the freezer section for ice cubes.
Yeah.
Whereas now,
it actually works.
We can put ice cream in there. That to me is a big win. Being able
to definitely. Definitely.
Other than that, we've kept it super simple. So we have gas for our...
we've got a full-size oven.
Full-size oven. Gas. And we converted that ourselves from...
being normal gas to LPG.
Which is the bottled gas.
Yeah.
So we did that ourselves. That was quite simple to convert. And then we've got like some people on narrowboats have like an electric kettle, but obviously that also takes up energy. And the biggest thing you're going to struggle with is electricity as your energy when you're on the move.
Yeah.
Or off grid, like gas, you can refill from a bottle, water, you can refill, all of that kind of stuff. But electricity is the stuff that's slightly harder. So we have a gas kettle, as in we stick the kettle on top of the, like a camping kettle.
Oh, like a stovetop kettle.
Yeah.
So you pop it on top of your hob.
Yeah.
That's one thing that makes a difference to conserving electricity. And then I don't know what else we have. We have a non-electric coffee machine, which is one of our favorite things. So it's like a rock coffee machine, so it works with pressure.
Yeah, it's an espresso machine, because we wanted to have like espresso based drinks, but we're like, we don't know how we can make the energy work, but the rock espresso machine we would totally recommend.
Yeah, and then we've got a Bellman
stick. And a Bellman stick. Wait, so I've got it. My head's trying to work out this non-electric coffee machine. So it's not an AeroPress.
You want to go get it?
Yeah.
Yeah, please do. I'm super interested in this. I think it's just like, it'd be really cool to be able to picture what
this is going to look like. And it's small.
So you've got hot water in the top here and coffee in the tamp here.
Yeah.
And then lift it up.
And then the pressure of you pushing down the wings.
Yeah.
We've got a stovetop steamer as well, so we can have flat whites every morning. Because Emily's trained as the barista, so I appreciate that.
I have seen these stovetop steamers as well, and they're really neat. And it's almost like, it's like a little bottle with like a little spout, isn't it? And I've seen like little silver ones, and you just put them on top. And I've seen those. They're really cool, those. So they do work. They do let you steam. Has it got like a lever or a little switch on it, or
got like a knob, like what's
like a, oh yeah, knob that you can turn.
Yeah.
Bit like on a coffee machine. You have the little Oh, cool. Oh, I have to look that up. That sounds really interesting. And I always like to ask my guests this question, which is to do with sustainability. So sustainability wise, what do you wish you or we had more of?
I think for us, like decorating the boat, we have wanted to do it as like ethically and sustainably as possible. But there has been a real toss up between like super eco-friendly, sustainable, fair trade items and things we can afford.
Yeah.
So we kind of, for some, like really invested in like good quality, like pieces that are definitely from ethical places. And then other things we've like tried to get secondhand, tried to get Facebook Marketplace, Gumtree, or shops. But there's some things that it's just been really hard to source.
Yeah.
So like just kind of affordable homeware stuff, like that's just, I know that's asking for a lot to make it all, because
there's a reason extra.
It's interesting,
I kind of wish we had like most of our, you know, life savings are in this life savings.
little life.
and in some ways it is, you know, if we'd had a few more years to save up and things, we would have been able to do that. But actually, that isn't the reality. When you first buy a house, you need to buy all the bits and the things.
And you can always add those things as you go along as well. I think sometimes there's a pressure, people feel a pressure of having to be completely sustainable. And in this day and age, we want to be, and there's more people interested in doing that, which is really, really good. But I think as long as you're trying and doing your bit, so for example the secondhand items that you've got, and you've got a few selected things that maybe did cost a bit more, but you know they're going to last, if everyone even did that, just that alone, that works wonders as well. I think sometimes people can feel guilty and think, oh, we're not 100% sustainable, but in without being cliched, like you need to be able to sustain it as well. So like there's people who will try and do everything, and if they can, it's fantastic, and that's great, but not everybody, the majority of people can't do that. So I think for you guys, like doing your bits that you've done, I think it's really good. So I think maybe it's a case of that, it's almost a wish that more people maybe bought secondhand every now and then, or you know, use Facebook Marketplace, or did buy just a few items when they can, that are sustainable and last longer, maybe.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you can make the searching for secondhand things and like the scouring Facebook Marketplace into like quite an adventure for us. Like it's like, oh, how can we find it? And I think you make it fun then, instead of like guilt or shame driven. You're like, I'm gonna, like, this is an adventure.
It is.
Do it up and upcycle.
Yeah, it's more creative as well.
Then as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can make things look completely different as well when you're buying secondhand items as well. You can do some amazing things with that. Really, really, really cool stuff. Oh, well, Pete and Em and Oat, wherever he is in the boat, thank you so much for joining me today on the Tiny Sessions podcast. And if anyone wants to find out more about you guys, head over onto their Instagram page. It's called The Little Floating Home. It's really lovely, and you'll be able to see more about their renovations and the move as well. You guys are going to be moving in 2 weeks, which is really, really cool. So a big thank you to you guys. Thank you so much, Pete, Emma, Note.
Thank you for having us.
It's been fun.
You're so welcome.